Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello and welcome to EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. This month's topic is pain in neurological disorders. And in today's episode, we will talk about pain in people with dementia. My name is Katarina Rukavina, and I'm a neurologist and movement disorder specialist in Belitz in Germany with a PhD in clinical neuroscience. I also serve as a management group member and an e-learning representative of the EAN Scientific Panel on Pain. My guest today is Professor Kyla Herr. Professor Herr is professor in the College of Nursing at the University of Iowa. Over the past 35 plus years, she has been engaged in research, education, and professional activities, focusing on the problem of pain in older adults, with special emphasis on assessment strategies, improving practices through translation research, and end-of-life care. Professor Herr has been a long-standing advocate for improving quality of pain care in older adults. And among other activities, she serves as a chair of the Special Interest Group on Pain in Older Adults for the International Association for the Study of Pain, EASP. Hello, Kyla.
Good morning, Katarina.
It is a real privilege to interview you today, and thank you for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
So, in Europe, over 10 million people live with dementia. And because of the aging of European population, this number will likely further increase. At the same time, chronic pain is highly prevalent and affects up to 30% of adults in Europe. For the start, I would like to ask you some general questions about pain in people with dementia. Is this a common problem? And are there any specific features that we need to be aware of? Or in the other words, is pain in people with dementia different than pain in general population?
Thanks, Katarina. Yes, pain in dementia has prevalent, if not more prevalent, as it is in the older adult population in not only in Europe, but worldwide. It's a huge challenge. And what we've learned is that, well, first, there are many misbeliefs about pain that make it a significant problem. People feel that because they can't tell us they're hurting, or express pain, that they're not feeling pain. And this is not a truth. You know, studies have clearly shown that people in dementia do experience pain, but the processing and interpretation of that signal, the pain signal, is altered because of the neuropathology that occurs with dementia, such as the loss of brain tissue. And the particular area that's impacted is the prefrontal cortex, which causes the descending pain inhibition functions to be altered. So one of the big differences is that people with dementia, when they feel pain, they are not able to process it and put it into context the way that we would if, you know, when we hurt. So they may react differently. You know, they may be fearful or lash out or be aggressive. So responses that are not as common in other people that can tell us about their pain. And the other major challenge that they have is the difficulty communicating their pain. So it's not that they don't experience it, but it's perceived differently and they can't share it with us so that they can get help.
That's very interesting. Thank you. And how is the pain impacting people with dementia? And I mean, especially in a context, in an inpatient setting, does pain have any impact on clinical outcomes in patients with dementia?
I think it has a significant impact on how we are able to care effectively and get good health outcomes. You know, of course, the lack of communication is a huge challenge for providers. And I think, you know, in the long-term care setting, staff become more familiar with what individuals do with dementia when they're hurting. But in the inpatient setting, you don't know them. You don't know the way they normally act. They come in for care. They may be reacting in ways that are typically attributed to the pathology of dementia. So, you know, aggressive, resistive behaviors, combativeness. And response of providers is often to try to stop those behaviors, but they do it with the wrong approach, you know, using sedatives or antipsychotic medications, which will, you know, minimize the behaviors, but it's only covering up the underlying pain. And so that's a huge issue. And so this difficulty communicating, the difficulty of staff to understand what they're experiencing is definitely going to impact our treatment or lack of treatment, which then interferes with being able to mobilize them and do the, you know, physical activities, range of motion, standing, bathing, usual care activities that are important become challenges. And so it takes more staff, more cost to the organization. And ultimately, you have someone who's suffering because we haven't hit the right problem.
Definitely. And what can we healthcare professionals do? How can we approach patients with dementia when we suspect they are in pain? And how can we better recognize and better assess this pain?
Yeah, that's a great question, Katerina. So I typically recommend that healthcare providers approach people with dementia from the lens of a detective. And we have, because it's not black and white, and we have to gather information from different sources to be able to really try to put together the picture of what's going on with this person. I think starting with anticipating that the person with dementia is very likely to have multiple pain conditions and undergo painful procedures in the inpatient setting that are going to cause discomfort. You know, studies have shown that people with dementia, looking at the prevalence of pain-related problems, it's the same. You know, just because you have dementia doesn't mean you're not going to have osteoarthritis or low back pain or rheumatoid arthritis or diabetic neuropathy, spinal stenosis. I mean, these are all common problems as we age. And they don't go away just because we get dementia and can't communicate what we're experiencing. So you have to keep that in mind and looking at their their diagnostic panel and what they're experiencing can be helpful to anticipate, is pain a potential problem here? And then I also would say that each healthcare provider needs to be an advocate for this vulnerable population and be very proactive in trying to identify and then treat pain. But, and so you ask the question of, well, how do we assess it? So the first step is what I just said, looking at their situation and see if we can identify reasons why they might have pain. Second, we should still try the gold standard self-report. Many people with dementia are able to communicate their pain, even if it's just with simple words or a nod of their head. And so we should try getting that self-report from them. But many, especially as their dementia advances, are not able to communicate verbally. So how do they communicate with us? They do it through their behaviors. And that's what we need to be observant of, is what is going on with them behaviorally. And over the past decade or more, people committed to trying to improve pain in this population have been developing tools, behavior pain tools, that capture common pain behaviors so that we can evaluate and monitor changes in those over time. And so, you know, getting a baseline assessment and then repeatedly using a tool to look at changes in behavior, especially when we've tried a treatment for pain, looking to see if those behaviors change. And so using a tool that all the healthcare team is familiar with and using can help us to to really monitor for those behaviors. I wanted to mention there's a tool that has been developed in Europe that has gotten a lot of testing and evaluation is the PAIC. And it was developed in a cross-country collaboration and has been evaluated and translated into the different languages in Europe and other countries. It started with 30 behaviors and then was narrowed down to 15 to make it more feasible to use. And they just recently published a shorter version of 5 behaviors that are the most common behaviors that help to identify pain that can be completed in 2 minutes by nursing staff. So, and there are other tools. You may have heard of the pain ad, the Dolloplus, Abby. And it's just important to pick a tool that's been developed and validated for the culture and population, you know, that people are working with. But I think it's really important for this particular aspect is to have a tool, train staff on its use, and establish a system for documenting those behavior scores and using it across disciplines to be able to evaluate and communicate what people are seeing. So that's the third thing, is looking at behaviors. The fourth is to engage caregivers. So especially in the acute care setting, where a person comes in and nobody knows them and what they're normally like, the caregiver is the person who has spent time with them and knows how they react when they hurt and can help communicate changes in behavior that might, you know, suggest that pain is a cause. So seeking input from them is very important. And then the last step of this approach to assessing pain in people with dementia, if you still have questions about, you know, are these behaviors pain-related or is it something else, you can do an analgesic trial to validate that pain is the cause of the behaviors. And so that might start with acetaminophen, advancing to stronger analgesics if there's no response before ruling pain out as a cause. And if the behaviors improve with an analgesic trial, then you can assume that pain is an underlying cause and step back and do a comprehensive treatment plan, looking at non-drug and drug interventions as well as the risks and benefits of the different treatment options.
Thank you, Keila. I think it's really important, the point that you made, because there is a lot of controversy around self-reporting in people with cognitive issues. And it's really important here what you are stressing, that we should encourage self-reporting also in people with cognitive issues. And thank you also for providing us with some strategies that we can use when self-reporting is not possible. Could you please now tell us something about the management of pain in people with dementia? Are there any special management strategies that you would recommend us? And are there any differences in comparison with the general population that we need to consider?
Yes, I would say that treatment of pain and dementia should initially follow best practice recommendations for pain management in older adults, because many of the treatment options that are recommended related to safety and efficacy are applicable for this population. The main differences are that we have to select, especially when we're looking at non-drug treatment, we have to select interventions that are possible to use and that are potentially can be effective in someone that has cognitive challenges. So you're not going to be able to use cognitive behavioral approaches or guided imagery or things that require advanced cognitive processing to help address pain. So focusing more on physical strategies is going to be, you know, a better approach. Physical things like massage, heat and cold, or relaxation and distraction strategies, you know, music, rocking, folding warm clothes can be helpful for people with rheumatoid arthritis in their hands. So just from a non-drug perspective, think about, you know, what would likely work in this population. And also asking the caregiver, you know, what was effective for this person when, you know, earlier when they could communicate and when they had pain, and get their input. And from a pharmacological perspective, there really aren't differences in the choices of pharmacologic agent, but on how we might use them. And probably the biggest one that's of concern is we can't do PRN treatment of pain, because to get a medication as a PRN, you have to, the patient has to ask for it and let you know they're hurting. And that's not going to happen with the population of dementia. So around the clock dosing is going to be important once we're certain that pain is the cause of the behaviors that we're trying to treat.
Okay, that's really important. Thank you. Lastly, I would like to ask you, what about the caregivers? So how is the pain in a person with dementia affecting their caregivers and loved ones? And do you have any advice for them?
Yeah, I think this is really an important topic because caregivers play such an important role in helping to address and manage pain. And just being a caregiver of someone with dementia is very frustrating, and they may feel helpless and exhausted. It's not an easy job. And I think what is most helpful is for us as healthcare providers is to acknowledge their contributions and encourage them and provide support where we can. You know, empowering caregivers with more information and tools that would help them to recognize pain and communicate to the provider can be very key. The tools I talked about earlier that measure behaviors, caregivers can use those and record their scores and gather information to share with the provider, you know, when they come in for an appointment. We are currently conducting a randomized controlled trial that's evaluating a toolkit intervention for caregivers of persons with pain and dementia, hoping that this will assist them to gather important information and to be able to collaborate more effectively with a provider. And so providing support, positive reinforcement, such as guiding them to appropriate resources, can be very powerful. The other thing I'd mention is that we developed a free website of evidence-based tools and resources for caregivers dealing with pain in persons with dementia. It can be accessed at geriatricpain.org. Not too difficult a website to remember. And there's a whole section for caregivers with information about pain problems, how to assess pain, tools to communicate with your provider, and videos that are very, I think, helpful and supportive in recognizing, you know, that others have done this and cared for, you know, their loved ones with pain, and kind of some support systems that might be helpful to them to feel valued and encouraged to take on this challenging job, but very, very important.
Thank you, Kila. That's very interesting. I'll check the website. Thank you. Thank you very much for joining us today, for sharing your expertise. It was really, really very interesting, and I have learned a lot, and I really enjoyed interviewing you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Katerina, for inviting me and for taking time to raise up this important area that we need to consider as healthcare providers.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EANcast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.